Hi, this is Anushka Fernandopoli. I hope this talk supports you in your practice. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button under my picture on dharmaseed.org or go to my website, anushkaf.org, A-N-U-S-H-K-A-F.org, and click on donate. Thanks. I appreciate your support. So we had the opportunity to be inspired by so many visions and passions and dreams this morning. And the world would be a great place for all of them to be realized. So it's good for us to do everything we can to make sure that happens. And one of them is to look into what is it that actually gets in the way of us being able to follow our own passions and dreams like this? Why do these things not always come true? So I'd like to highlight one big one in that, which is fear. And then a small subset of that is self-doubt. Fear of external factors, fear that we ourselves cannot make it. So it turns out that actually this fear of failure is also a part of delusion, meaning that actually the people who have succeeded the most are also the people who have failed the most. So for example, in 1923, Babe Ruth broke the record for the most home runs in a season, and he also broke the record for the highest batting average. But he broke a third record that most people don't know about, which is that he struck out more times than any other player in Major League Baseball had. So it was actually his fearlessness that contributed to his success, that he was willing to keep going up there, and I suppose also that his coach was willing to keep putting him up there. So he was the first player to hit 60 home runs in one season. This is pre-steroidal drugs, I think. And he held that record for 34 years until Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in 1961. He also held the lifetime total home run record of 714 home runs for 39 years until Hank Aaron broke it in 1974. At the same time, another of his records that is not so much spoken about is he had the highest number of career strikeouts. So 1,330 strikeouts. He was struck out at bat that many times. And he held that record for 29 years. Until he was beaten by Mickey Mantle. So these are two of the most famous baseball players ever. Like, even people who don't follow baseball that much have heard of them. And they met with great success, but actually also they had a lot of failure. So that's kind of a powerful lesson, right? In order to succeed, you can't be afraid to fail. So Wayne Gretzky, who is an ice hockey player, who actually missed 90% of his shots, although he had all these scoring records. And his comment on this was, well, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you never take. So you might miss 90% of the shots you take, but you miss 100% of the shots you never take. So encouragement to look past your fear, to give it a try. So it can be interesting to reflect as part of our getting to know ourselves and understand ourselves, what is our relationship to fear? What is our relationship to taking risks? And all of us have different patterns of this. So from our own conditioning, from our own seeming personality. So I'll ask you to reflect for a moment, supposing that you say, like, there's different kinds of risk. And let's see what we'll call them. So let's say there's physical risk. So physical risk could include bungee jumping, extreme sports, you know, liking to take physical body risks. Then we could say there's social risks. Let me put them all up here. So social risks might be going out of your comfort zone in terms of meeting people or going to places where you don't know people, and being able to engage in that way, like just being willing to take that risk. Financial risks, so risking money in some kind of venture, or feeling like you can live with or without a certain kind of cushion. Intellectual risks. So are you willing to challenge ideas? Are you willing to put ideas out there? Are you willing to innovate in that way? And then you could say emotional risks, which are connected to social risks, but even other ways of, like, are you able to and willing to feel various different feelings? Are you willing to be vulnerable? Are you willing to share those feelings with other people? So what is your risk profile? So you could consider for each of these different areas, you know, am I a big risk taker in this, or am I a low risk taker? You know, am I conservative, or am I a daredevil? And it could be very different in different ones. You know, there could be a bungee jumper who never wants to gamble money, or there could be a radically sociable person who is scared about putting forward ideas. Right? And it's not even necessarily like any of these are wrong, but it's just, it can be helpful to reflect on your own risk profile. Like, where is it that I generally take risks in my life, and where do I hold back? Now, it's not always that risks are good to take, too. Right? So some risk takers are no longer with us because their risks have caused their demise, right? So it's not saying, like, everyone should jump their motorcycle over the Grand Canyon or, you know, anything like that. But in terms of the dreams and the visions and the passion that you have, or even to actually just allow yourself to shine in the world, there's something of a risk that needs to be taken, often in some or many of these areas, and it's fear that actually holds us back. So it can be good to develop an awareness about this. And as you start to learn about this, as you start to notice this in your life, developing a healthy relationship with fear. So fear is there for most of us, and it's actually there more than we might ordinarily think. And some of you may have noticed this on retreat, as you're quiet and you're kind of settling in, like, wow, there's even nothing to be afraid of, but there's actually a good deal of fear, even sometimes of small things. Now, some of that in the Vipassana practice is considered actually a good sign that we could be noticing more the fear that's already there. And also that the more that we're actually able to notice the truth of the way things are, which is actually that life is completely insecure, not in our control, and we don't know what's going to happen next on any level. A sort of seemingly normal reaction to that unfortunate seemingly fact is actually fear. Right? So in fact, in certain models of spiritual practice, fear is considered actually a very advanced stage and a good stage to have, because it will mean that you might be actually looking at the truth of the way things are. You might actually be seeing that life is uncertain. Things are insecure. So how do you work with this fear then? So kind of like the challenge of facing that which cannot be loved with love, can we face fear with fearlessness? So can we find actually some place in ourselves from which we can be grounded enough to actually open to fear itself? Sometimes fear is kind of lurking underneath. So sometimes there are other stronger states that are there. For example, anger or rage or something, which sometimes actually masks a vulnerability or like a fear that it's actually much harder for us to tap into than that sense of rage. So the rage could be this sense of energy and power plus aversion, hatred. But it's actually feels easier for us to be with that. There's a greater sense of self arising in that than the fear. You know, the fear makes us very soft, open, vulnerable. It's like tapping into something that it can be hard to feel. And yet the truth is we're reluctant to take the risk, but it only makes sense to take the risk. So here's a poem by Audre Lorde. Called A Litany for Survival. And it's a fairly long poem, but I'll read you the end part, which is, when we are loved, we are afraid love will vanish. When we are alone, we are afraid love will never return. When we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard, nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it's better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. So this is true. This is true, isn't it? In the Buddhist teaching, we reflect on this, actually, that death is certain. And also, in our process of going through these different stages and growing and learning, we actually have to die in a different way, in a more psychological way. You know, we have to let go of our ideas of who we are. We have to move into a new stage. So kind of in this hero's journey map, going between the known and the unknown, being willing to actually have a certain identity not survive, so in order to grow into the new one. So allowing ourselves to be strong like this, actually allowing our own gifts, talents, passions to shine forth. So again, one of our key ingredients and supports in this is love, metta. So the strength of the force of love. The other subset of fear that can come up a lot is self-doubt. So maybe it's like, oh yeah, somebody could do that, but not me. I couldn't be the one to do that. Not poor little old me. So there again in that is this clinging to this identity. And it can be this identity that's unseen of me, the small, limited person. Me, the one who can only do these things and not these things. Me, the one who's not rich and famous. Me, the one who's not as talented as so-and-so. So the comparing mind is not your friend in this. The comparing mind is the mind that's always finding someone who's better than you, and then often someone worse than you. And actually, in the Buddhist teaching, even comparison to someone and saying, like, oh, they're equal to me, is considered also delusion. So it's like comparison is madness, said the Buddha. You know, this level of comparison is madness. And comparison can totally both drive you crazy, kick you off your path, and also feed this demon of self-doubt, you know, this mara of self-doubt.
Angie,
yeah.
Is there ever anything good about comparison or anything like that?
Is there anything good about comparison? Comparison is literally, you know, Buddha said it's madness, right? But actually, the piece that is maybe you could tease out of it is the piece about discernment, right? So you could call wisdom is like seeing clearly, like, oh, this is like this and this is like this. But the comparison is when there's a sense of self that is like sort of like, oh, this is me, this is who I am, and that's who the other person is. And then it's like, oh, this is me, and then that's, you know. It's kind of like this belief in the sense of self with this kind of game, yeah. So number one, because then there's this belief in this ego self that, like, of course, keeps changing and keeps getting interrupted or disrupted or created in this way and then created in that way. But then it's so illusory, you know. And there's, like, no winning with it. Like, it keeps, like, coming up in this way and then going in this way. And you would think that it would be good if you could always think yourself equal to others, but still, you're on that knife's edge of the creation of self and other, right? And so it could flip at any moment. So you might have noticed, like, during this retreat, sometimes in which your monkey mind was doing this. So comparison between yourself and other in so many ways, right? So, like, maybe how well you perceive someone else meditates, or how well you perceive that they walk slowly, or how much food someone else is taking or not taking. Or then, you know, when we did our circle, you know, there's easily the opportunity to compare yourself to other people, to judge, right? Like, oh, I'm like, oh, that person's done this much, I've only done this much, or they should be like this, and I'm like this, and, you know. It's also fed by fear, right? Like the comparison thing, like it's totally fed by a sense of fear. Of needing to constantly be gauging, like I'm like this, they're like this, they're like this. It's like, you know, it's like if you have like a stock market, it's always like going up and down and up and down. And where are we? So yeah.
Just tease that out a little more. In the environmental world, comparison among each other is one of the key strategies that's often used. This person's producing energy more than you are, and then, you know, so that, and I always thought it was sort of nuts, but is that something different from what you're talking about?
Yeah, so this is like on the level of the belief in self, right? It's not skillful, right, in which there's a belief in self. But it also is possible, for example, like, you know, we talk about like how you make decisions and trying to make decisions from a place of groundedness and spaciousness and then intuitiveness. But then there are sometimes, for example, if you want to decide on a cell phone plan, when it actually is helpful to compare, you know, like you could make the decision intuitively, but it actually sometimes helps to compare, like, this much one costs this much, and there's this many minutes, and I tend to call people at night, and, you know. So on a, like, a relative level, it works, which is something kind of like the, you know, something like factual or the cost of plane tickets. But it's more like on this level of us judging ourselves in this, like, self-worth way that it doesn't make any sense. And this is part of the way in which also then it takes so much energy to, like, maintain whatever it is that our place is in that order. You know, like, it takes a lot of energy for us to maintain our own self-story, either of being better or of worse, you know? So, like, sometimes we get caught in this pattern of, like, oh, I'm no good, like, I'm not as good, or I'm inferior. And then if any evidence pops up to the contrary, that you actually are talented and beautiful and good and people like you, you got to smush that down because you have to maintain your story, you know? And then same if you have to feel like you're better than everyone else, then any evidence that you might have messed up, or you might make a mistake, or that you're vulnerable. Like, you got to smash that down. Like, you got to box that up and put that in a dark corner of your mind, because, like, you have to maintain this story, and it takes tremendous amount of energies, and all of it is fueled by fear. You know.
Is there a reason why Spirit Rock is based in Marin County then?
Why is that?
I would say society here, having, I'm sort of comparing. The comparing element, having lived in Europe, and since I've lived in Marin, there seems to be more of a society based on comparing. I just noticed, and whether that's I'm comparing the comparing, which makes me super delusive.
It could be. I don't know. I mean, I don't live in Marin, but I think it also is good to see, like, there's a way in which we go somewhere else, but then our mind comes along, right? And it could be, like, in a new environment, then the mind tends to compare more, you know? Like, in an environment in which, like, you're a part of that environment, then it's like, oh, I'm fine, I'm cool, I'm equal, you know? And then if you go into a new environment, maybe you both do compare and also perceive comparing more. It's just something to check out. It's an interesting thing to notice. So that's where, like, you know, fear then breeds more comparison, right? Like, if you go into a new environment, you know, kind of like you might be like, oh, who's here, and who might I be friends with, and who am I going to sit next to, and, you know, apparently there's a certain type on the Enneagrams or personality scale that's like, goes into a room and looks in, is like, well, who can beat me up, and who am I going to be able to beat up, and, you know. So, you know, there's, like, this constant comparison thing happen. And it all is, like, based in fear. You know, it's all based in fear. So what can we do about this, right? So this is partly just the arising of self. You know, this is the arising of self in our mind. And the arising of self happens constantly in different ways. So we can actually learn to see it. Like, we don't actually need to obliterate it. We just have to not believe it. Like, this is a projection of the unenlightened mind, this constant throwing up of different senses of self. And in fact, actually, even when you know that it's not true, it might still keep getting thrown up. But then, since you know it's not true, it's not actually such a big deal. So the metaphor, a common metaphor in spiritual teachings is that, say you're walking along, and here this is an apt metaphor, and you see something and you think it's a snake. Let's say a rattlesnake. And you go, oh no, a rattlesnake, I saw that in the picture. Ah. And then you realize, like, oh, actually it's just a rope. It's not a snake, it's a rope. Right? So, like, what happened to the snake? Like, where did the snake go? Like, the snake didn't actually go anywhere because it wasn't really there in the first place. Right? So it's like that with this, there's this constant throwing up of this sense of self, this, you know, perception of self, but it's actually just a misperception. But we believe each misperception as it arises, and we invest in it, and then we have a lot of stress around it, strain around it, which includes comparison, self-doubt, you know, this, that, and the other. So for each of us, there also might be particular fears that are standing in the way of us being able to manifest in the world as we would most be able to serve. And so from the standpoint of, you know, leadership, being able to bring our own talents and gifts forth to intersect with opportunities and with what needs to be done in the world in order to serve, it's helpful for us to look at this. So we're going to do a little exercise around looking at your fears. So this is an exercise that is, some of you may have done some exercise like this. It's a pair exercise also, and I'll have you pair up with someone different. And in fact, just to make it interesting, maybe you should pair with someone who's of a different gender than you. I think we have equal numbers of different gendered people here, something. Yeah, pair with someone different also, just to get a different different experience. So we're going to do a looping question exercise. So a looping question is where one of you will ask a question of the other. So what fear is standing in the way of your dream? And then your job when you hear that question is just to answer, like, whatever comes forth from you naturally. And then that person will say, okay, thank you. And then you ask your partner that. So you kind of go back and forth asking the same question. And you can talk about what version of that question feels most resonant to you, but basically it's like, what fear is getting in the way of your dream, of your vision, of you manifesting in the world? So you can talk in the beginning about which question you want to be asked that actually resonates for you. So you actually go back and forth. Like, one person asks the question, you answer, they can say thank you, then I'll ask the question, you answer, thank you. And then you keep doing that back and forth. So in one sense, it seems like, oh, you just asked me that, didn't you hear my answer? But it's not that. The point is that it's actually like a deepening of your reflection kind of thing, in which each time you just answer whatever it is that seems real to you in that moment. And sometimes it can lead to some interesting insight about what it is that's actually stopping us from being all that we can be in the world. So meaning that sometimes the first answer on the surface, you know, like if someone asks you, like, how are you? And you're like, oh, I'm fine. But then if they ask you again, like, no, really, how are you? And then you get to a deeper level of detail and you're like, well, actually, I've had this cold for a while, you know, so on. So in your answer, you don't need to give the paragraph-long answer, just whatever sort of comes up for you, and then kind of let it land. So I don't know if that looping thing is clear, if we need to do a little demo.
Demo,
please. Demo? Demo? Okay. Oh, who wants to demo? Who knows this exercise and is willing to be a part of a demo? You know this? Okay. Does someone else want to do it too? How about someone? Is there someone who is a differently gendered person who can be with Brian in this exercise? Okay, great, Jen. So do you mind coming up here for this exercise? You're not shouting across the room here. So actually, we'll stop recording so you can be honest.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.